If there's one man who's shown he can rise above the dirt and grime of Hollywood, it's Ricky Gervais. Coming from virtually nothing, he built a career spanning multiple award-winning stand-up specials and movies. But that wasn't all. He co-created one of the most acclaimed sitcoms of all time, The Office, the remake of which became the most popular sitcom of all time. It's made all the more remarkable by the fact that most of Hollywood absolutely hates his guts. But despite multiple attempts to cancel him, and despite Ricky exposing the hypocrisy to the world at their own award events, his career is still going strong.
But I did see the one clip that somebody put on the internet about him saying, don't virtue signal, just come out here and get your little prize, go fuck off, because nobody cares about your opinion. I was like, thank you. Thank you, Ricky.
So let's see how Ricky Gervais exposed the disgusting industry that is Hollywood. Now, Ricky Gervais is probably the last person you'd expect to find fame. He was certainly never searching for it himself. He was born in 1961 in Reading, England, to a working-class family living in a council estate, which is a kind of British social housing. For the first 30 years, Ricky Gervais lived a completely ordinary life. He went through school and then university like anyone else, switching his course from biology to philosophy because it took far less time. He was even in a band, although their first record only ever got popular in the Philippines years after the band broke up. After university, Ricky moved with his girlfriend to a tiny one-bedroom flat, working odd jobs and hovering on the fringes of show business.
In the early days, obviously, separate nothing. In fact, we lived in one room for like the first 6 years. I mean, it was tiny. It was a bed, a window, a door, obviously, to get into it. I could open the fridge door.
Yeah.
Seriously, there was a fridge, a cooker, and a sink. Yeah. There wasn't even a bathroom. That was shared with the other rooms.
It was this time in the real world that cemented Ricky Gervais's humour and common sense. It gave him a knowledge and understanding of real people's lives that most of the Nepo babies in Hollywood will never understand. The ego and self-importance that flows through Hollywood was never a problem for him because everything wasn't handed to him. Ricky would bring his real-life knowledge and experience to his comedy in a way that few have been able to replicate. But most of all, it was his understanding of normal people and the characters you meet that sealed his rise to fame. While Ricky Gervais became a household name off the back of The Office, it wasn't where his career began. Instead, The Office and the idea for it came from a radio show Ricky was involved in a few years before. It was while working there that he met Stephen Merchant, and the two immediately sparked a friendship. Now, the radio show would get cancelled only a year after it started, but that didn't matter. It was the connections that he made that were important. It led Ricky to getting on panel shows and other radio shows, slowly building connections in the industry. A couple years later, and Ricky and Stephen had built enough recognition to get noticed. So, they set out to make the pilot for their own show, a satirical mockumentary following a set of office workers. And this was where Ricky's character of David Brent came to life. And in the digital age, where our personal information feels more like public property, it's alarming to see just how accessible our data is to predators and data brokers. That's why I want to tell you about our video sponsor, Aura. You see, data brokers sell your information to anyone interested, scammers, spammers, you name it. Your full name, email, home address, health records, and even details about your relatives, it's all out there. That's why I've turned to Aura. Aura meticulously scans for data brokers peddling my information, and steps in to automatically submit opt-out requests on my behalf. Imagine logging into Aura and finding out just how many brokers are exploiting your personal information. But here's the kicker. Cleaning up my digital footprints with Aura does more than just cut down on the annoying spam. It's a crucial step in safeguarding my accounts, from social media to banking, against hackers who could exploit this freely available information. I don't know if you saw this, but AT&T revealed that over 72 million customer records, both existing and former customers, were released on the dark web. They recommended those affected use strong passwords, monitor account activity, and consider credit freezes or fraud alerts from credit bureaus. Well, Aura does all of this for me. And best of all, I didn't have to download several different apps just because a company couldn't keep my data secure. If my info was compromised in the AT&T data breach, I wouldn't worry, because Aura is always on, always doing the hard work of keeping me safe. So make sure to check out aura.com/moon. Link in the description to start your 2-week free trial today. Now, for those of you who haven't seen the show, the character is the walking embodiment of self-importance and confidence masking insecurity. It's a masterful depiction of a character that we've all probably met before, made all the much better by the small details Ricky added to the performance. The way he strokes his tie when he's proud, or effortlessly seems so oblivious to everyone else's embarrassment, shows it all comes from real-life experience. David Brent makes it clear that from the beginning of his career, Ricky Gervais had a very clear understanding of how people use self-importance to create an illusion for themselves. David's drive for power power, fame, and for everyone else to both like and respect him is barely under the surface. Both the audience and pretty much all of the characters around him can see it. It's the central character combined with the hilarious realism of the rest of the show which makes The Office one of the best comedy shows of all time. It was something that regular people were crying out for, but that the media establishment simply couldn't provide itself. Of course, with so many people watching and laughing, the awards soon piled in. The Office's success also gave Ricky Gervais's comedy career a jumpstart. His first special called Animals put him straight into the top tier of comedians in the world. The content of his stand-up was made up of the same brutal honesty that people had come to expect by now. If a joke was funny, Ricky didn't shy away from it. Whatever the subject, if there was laughter to be found, then he would pounce on it. It's the very essence of comedy that it needs to challenge your expectations, and often that involves tackling awkward subjects and offending people who can't take a joke. At the start of his career, this wasn't a problem, but over the past decade, we've seen the pendulum shift, and now comedians can easily get ostracized for one wrong statement. Ricky Gervais has been immune to that, mainly because his jokes are always just jokes. Often comedians land in trouble because their joke was bad and it spoke to a real prejudice they have. But it was never like that for Ricky Gervais, who was always just using the subject to make people laugh. He doesn't care if people get offended, so the attempts to cancel him just dissolve into nothing. Hollywood and the media world as a whole didn't have the experience that made Ricky Gervais so loved by audiences. So as his career grew, many were eager to secure his talents.
It was his time working on a stand-up comedy that was the most important for this. Ricky Gervais was naturally gifted, of course. The success of The Office meant that he could skip performing to small crowds for years trying to get noticed, and he was able to go straight to his first special, which was met with widespread acclaim. Over the next decade, Ricky Gervais spent his time constantly working on and refining his comedy. He expanded on this process in a later interview with Backpage. You do it every night, and the audience is choosing the best bits. It's less of an art and more of a science. Now I've done this show to 500,000 people, there's not an audience who understands English that won't laugh in the same place. I could give you the readout on a graph and it would be exactly the same. It was through this process that over the 20 years after The Office, Ricky Gervais came to understand what real people laugh at and what they're interested in. That constant feedback and the need to stay in touch was something that Hollywood completely lacked. His ordinary background and viewpoint were exotic to them. It was this quality that got him booked so often for late night talk shows, comedy specials, and it's what eventually landed him his gig hosting the Golden Globes. Ricky Gervais hosted the award ceremony 5 times in total, each time bringing his own brand of honest and unapologetic humor. But by the time number 5 had rolled around, he was getting sick of it. When he started his career, most people he met didn't have the time for his jokes at the expense of celebrities. But years of scandals and being exposed for their crimes had since hardened the general public. What made it worse was the constant virtue signaling and the fakeness of celebrities caring about causes of regular people. Ricky was no stranger to charitable work, of course. He's done more for animal rights than nearly anyone else in the spotlight. But it had become clear to nearly everyone that most celebrities were just using charity and activism as a way to look good to their celebrity peers. It was a marketing tool to land them a better movie.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Did you see that Imagine song that all those knuckleheads got together and sang? Yeah. Imagine there's no heaven. This is not the time when everyone's Grammy's dying, you fucking idiot, to sing Imagine There's No Heaven.
And there's this sense of, you feel like they feel like they did something significant there.
She's
like,
so happy. She's Gal Gadot, whatever the fuck her name is, Wonder Woman. She's got this beautiful smile on her face and so happy to sing that.
Thank you.
Just like she's seducing you.
Yeah. I lost my job at the meatpacking plant, but Gal Gadot sang Imagine.
And it's a terrible version. You guys suck at singing.
To get them in better positions of power, it was this hypocrisy piled on top of all the others that led to Ricky's infamous speech. Now, if you're one of the only people who hasn't seen it yet, you should really give it a watch. He was brutal. Covering the abuse scandals, the funding from evil companies, Hollywood's problem with predators.
Look, talking of all you perverts, it was a big year. It was a big year for paedophile movies. Seriously, most films are awful, lazy, remakes, sequels. I've heard a rumour that there might be a sequel to Sophie's Choice. I mean, that'd just be Meryl Streep going, well, it's got to be this one then.
The lack of ideas, the sequels, as well as a few personal roasts.
Spoiler alert, season 2 is on the way, so in the end, he obviously didn't kill himself. Just like Jeff Epstein. Shut up. I know he's your friend, but I don't care.
Every scandal of embarrassment for these people was there, and it all was covered in each short minute. Ricky Gervais is perfectly set up to take down this kind of self-importance and ego. The groundwork was laid by the way that The Office deconstructs David Brent's bravado and unearned self-confidence. That obliviousness to who everyone else sees you is exactly the same problem that Hollywood has. He knew that all of the people at home watching were the real audience. The people in the room getting the awards were only props. It's clear this was the right decision now. Nobody remembers who actually got the Golden Globes, whilst people still talk about his monologue today. You can tell which of the actors and executives have bought into the Hollywood world of illusions by how they reacted to the joke. Lots of them, like Tom Hanks or Jonathan Pryce, took huge offense at his jokes, clearly taking themselves far too seriously as they shake their heads at Gervais' jokes. Others like DiCaprio were laughing along with us, even when they were right in the crosshairs. It shows that at least some people in Hollywood are capable of making a joke, but the majority are still hooked on political correctness. It's clearly a completely performative trend for them. As Ricky said in his speech, they'll happily overlook the abuses going on within Hollywood itself. But the second someone makes a joke or brings attention to these things, it's an inappropriate joke that's worthy of getting cancelled over.
A superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing, made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So
it comes from a desire to be famous and relevant, to stay afloat in the constant maelstrom of Hollywood. They need to keep their reputations intact because they all depended on each other for their multi-million dollar contracts and place within the industry. Ricky Gervais, who's been in the business for years but is still an outsider to the establishment, is perfectly placed to make fun of all of this. He's already proven himself that his creative projects don't depend on their approval. It makes him untouchable and completely unwilling to engage in the delusion they've all bought into. We've seen how delicate Hollywood personalities can get over a single joke. The Oscars have shown us that, so seeing them all having to grin and take it is the best gift the Golden Globes could have given us. Ricky Gervais's previous stand-up shows and jokes had already gotten him on Hollywood's cancel radar. In 2018, 2 years before, Gervais was criticized for making fun of Caitlyn Jenner.
She didn't do a lot for women drivers.
Ricky Gervais, who poked fun at the reality star during his Golden Globes monologue. Caitlin responded saying, quote, "I think what I'm going to do is call the Golden Globes and see if they need a new host for next year. We'll solve that problem."
It speaks to Hollywood's hypocrisy that they were perfectly happy overlooking her accident, which ended in tragedy. While they settled out of court, the LA Sheriff's Office wanted charges for vehicular manslaughter. But because for a very brief time she was an idol of Hollywood, Gervais was seen as the one in the wrong. In 2019, just a year before the speech, Gervais again came under fire for jokes he made over Twitter. It's almost a requirement for modern comedians to get caught up in the 24-hour outrage cycle that never stops on the platform. But his Golden Globe speech was the icing on the cake for a lot of them. Ever since, various activist groups have tried to cancel him over the jokes he makes. In 2022, the US LGBT rights group, GLAAD, took aim at him, saying that his most recent Netflix comedy special should be pulled from the platform. Because of some jokes he was making, the media ate this up like clockwork. There's tons of articles written at the time talking about how awful his comments were, but not a lot of actual people talking about it. The lack of popular support is clear, and it's much more likely to be yet another jab from Hollywood's elite. As Gervais said in a statement, these people are virtue signaling. They're basically saying that minorities don't have a sense of humor, which is so patronizing. These groups that people barely hear of make these statements speaking for the entirety of the group they represent, when really they're only speaking for a tiny group of people. Other than the articles getting published and the wave of Twitter outrage, nothing ever happens. It's a tactic to silence people, which has stopped working. If they can get Gervais on this, then it will damage his credibility. Really though, Gervais and the other comedians who are threatened with cancellation are just doing their job. They need to challenge the boundaries and broach controversial topics. At this point, comedy is the only voice on these subjects that hasn't been stripped of microaggressions and wrongthink. At least for now, companies are generally unwilling to cancel people over a few jokes. Netflix, in response to both Gervais's joke and Dave Chappelle's special, released an internal statement in support of them. And even more surprisingly, they said that any of their employees who can't deal with offensive jokes might need a new job. The specter of cancellation that runs through all of this really isn't that threatening anymore anyway. Unless someone does something truly nasty or criminal, they can only get cancelled by playing into the outrage and releasing some long, cringy apology video. If people get offended over some joke they make, they can just ignore it. Without fuel, the fire will die out. Now, this doesn't happen when people do something actually harmful. It's hard for people to forget that. But when barely anyone except some Hollywood elites care about something in the first place, it's easily forgotten. It shows that it's never been about the cause they're suddenly the champions of. The people calling out comedians for telling jokes know their audiences won't care. It only serves to make them look better, at least in their own minds. But in reality, it just shows how accurate Ricky Gervais's speech was and still is today.